weird to rename yourself. Like, it's not something that everybody does.
My name's Tiger. His name is Leo.
Walking into a news agency and seeing cups with names on them or cards with names on them, and mine was never there. Growing up, I actually quite enjoyed that.
It takes time to get used to a new name and identify with it and be able to feel like it's your own.
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Mike Bryden. No, that doesn't sound right. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Miguelito Bryden. No. Mickey? No. How about Mick? No. Names. They say a lot about us. And they're usually the first thing we tell someone when we meet them. They give us an identity. So today on All the Best, we've got three stories for you. And they're all looking at the different ways in which names make us who we are. I don't have a cool story behind my name. My parents liked it, and now I'm stuck with it. I'm not named after anyone, Michael isn't in my family history, and the coolest thing about it that I can find is that some mythical Old Testament Michael beat down a dragon. But there is something about having a cool story behind your name that would make you love it even more.
From a young age, walking into a news agency and seeing cups with names on them or cards with names on them, and mine was never there. Growing up, I actually quite enjoyed that because I felt like I was maybe slightly anti-establishment. I don't know. Like, it just was, I was different. I liked being different. I was born in the Promised Land on the Never Never River in Bellingen, northern New South Wales. It's an absolutely ridiculously named place to start with, so I guess it kind of fits the ridiculousness of the story of my name. Traditionally, according to my mother, the child is named after their father when it comes to their last name. The mother then gets to give them their first name, but she didn't believe in that. So my dad, it was his job to name me and my brother. She said that's because she got to go through the pleasure of childbirth, which is pretty crazy, I think. My name's Serge Negus. My mum, Kirsty, and my dad, George, were both journalists. Basically, our house in the Promised Land is a treehouse. It's built on stilts, and that's because the area is flood-prone. Lots of beautiful green kind of bungalow palms and stuff very close to the house. My mum and dad's bedroom is surrounded by a kind of boardwalk that then has fly screen around it. And so it's very open. There was a day bed that was out the front of their bedroom that was in the elements, out in the fresh air, and then a bathtub that is also an outdoor bath. So mum had a home birth. That morning, basically, before the midwife arrived, my dad and brother were pretty much, you know, the only people there helping mum. But that day, my dad was also interviewing the Russian ambassador for Australia at the time. So he basically, when he woke up that morning with my mother in labour, was freaking out because he thought that, you know, he was going to miss the birth. And so the last thing he was thinking about was a name for me. Dad had a flight to catch at, I think it was 8:30 or 9 o'clock to Sydney that morning. And I think my mum went into labour. She went into labour maybe around 4 or 5 o'clock. Given the fact that it's normally just a stressful situation anyway, having a child, but then also having to catch a plane to go to a very important interview, probably would have stressed my dad out more than my mum was stressed out by giving childbirth. Why couldn't he move the interview? Well, look, I guess locking down someone as prominent as the Russian ambassador for Australia at the time would have been quite difficult politically, and this is in 1990, so this would have been just before the Soviet Union disbanded, and so getting any interviews with any Soviet Union Russian political figures would have been incredibly difficult. And so it's the kind of interview I don't think you would have wanted to give up in the circumstances, because if you missed it, you know, the next thing you know, like, the Soviet Union's gone and you can't even interview these characters because they don't even have jobs anymore. Mum, being mum, the strong woman she is, just there was no doubt in her eyes ever. She was going to have the baby and she was going to have me quick enough to be able to get my dad to be able to hold me in his arms before he jumped on the plane. Obviously, true to her word, she knew what was up, and she gave birth to me well in advance of my dad having to leave to go to the airport and catch his flight. They hadn't come up with a name by that stage. Obviously, things were all a bit rushed at the time. So Dad got to his interview perfectly in time, interviewed the ambassador. After the interview finished, he then walked up to the ambassador and was like, oh, you know, today's an extra special day for me because my second son was born. And the ambassador was like, no, that's amazing. Like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, look, you know, like, I obviously had to do this interview, but I've got to go to the airport, Sydney Airport, and wait around for several hours to catch the next flight back up to Coffs. And when my dad told the Russian ambassador that, the ambassador just stopped him in his tracks and said, there's no way that that's happening. I'm going to talk to my people, and we're going to get clearance to be able to fly from Sydney Airport in the Russian private consulate jet so you can get there without this massive several hour delays to be able to go see your son. My dad on the plane with the Russian ambassador sat down getting really drunk on vodka and proceeded to brainstorm name ideas. My dad, you know, a big part of his life was looking into Russia, was looking into the Soviet Union, and obviously he had links there, and now he's flying in the ambassador's private jet up to Coffs Harbour so he can see his son way earlier than he thought he was going to. They were inclined to think about very Russian names for me. At the time, Mikhail Sergeyevich Gorbachev was still the president of Russia, so the first one they thought of was Sergeyevich. And they called my mum, my dad, and the Russian ambassador, and they called her from the plane's phone and announced with excitement to my mum, all right, we've found the name, Kirsty. We've got it. We're going to call him Sergeyevich after Mikhail Sergeyevich Gorbachev. My mum was just like, what, are you absolutely kidding me? That name's ridiculous. There is no way we're calling him Sergeyevich, and just hung up on the ambassador and my dad. 10 minutes later, a few more shots of vodka down, they call back again, and they're like, okay, we've got it this time, it's perfect, all right, let's call him Mikhail. And mum was like, what, Mikhail, why Mikhail? That, everyone will just call him Michael in Australia, you know, I mean, you haven't really been that original about it anyway, because you're just saying the names of one particular person. Hung up on him again. 10 minutes later, even more drunk on vodka, they call back, and they're like, okay, this time a little bit more conviction, they've got the name, and they're going to call me Serge. Sergeyevich means the son of Serge, so basically Mikhail Sergeyevich Gorbachev's dad was called Serge, and he was then called son of Serge, which is a very traditional thing to do naming-wise in Russia in particular. And mum's like, why are you going to call him Serge? And dad was like, well, look, we'll call him Serge in English, Sergey in Russian, Sergey in French, Sergio in Spanish, Sergio in Italian. It's a multicultural name, and basically that was it. And mum said, okay, fair enough, I can go with that, I like it. And that was how I got my name. And next minute, you know, dad and the Russian ambassador are landing at the Coffs Harbour airport in the private Russian jet, and dad got to see me 5 more hours earlier than he would have otherwise. So it's a pretty, yeah, crazy story, really. Sounds kind of narcissistic, but I actually love my name, and I am so appreciative of the fact that I have a unique name. I like being able to differentiate myself from, you know, a society that generally a lot of people have the same name. I've only ever met one or two other Serges in Australia, so for me it's really a point of difference, and I love it.
That story was by Serge Negus. Most people are stuck with their names. It's something we don't really have a choice over. But in this next story, we're going to hear how having the power to choose your new name can help you in shaping your new identity.
Elliot, I can't get to the phone right now. Just leave me a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
That was Elliot. But he hasn't always called himself that.
Where do I start? This blog is mainly to document my transition from female to male. I should introduce myself a little more, I guess, first. So, I don't have a name at the moment because I haven't settled on one. So, don't worry about that for now. I'll let you know when I pick one.
Elliot made this series in 2014, when he was living in Queensland. In each video, his voice would get slightly deeper and the shape of his face would change. Just a little. And even though we'd met in high school, watching those videos was sort of like I was getting to know him again.
Hello?
I remember when you were trying to decide on a name, you like went through a lot of different options. What were the other names that you considered besides Elliot?
I had a lot of lists. Like I had probably over like half a dozen lists where I took names off and put them back on and went back and forth. But the few that I told people, the first one that I kind of used in real life was Talon, and that was spelled T-A-L-O-N. But I didn't like that in the end. I think the next one was Toby. And then I just couldn't decide for a really long time. Made a lot of lists. And then I'd just look at them every couple of days and just cross off a name and be like, nah, I don't like that anymore. Add a few more when I felt like it. And then I think I just picked Elliot after that one.
Why do you think it took so long for you to decide on a name?
I think it, like, just like anybody, I mean, unless you're in a situation where another name was given to you and it just comes naturally, it's kind of weird to rename yourself. Because it's not something that everybody does, and, you know, just change your name, and it takes time to get used to a new name and identify with it and be able to feel like it's your own. And particularly being pre-testosterone, I was trying to pick a male name in quotation marks because names are not gendered, but a name that would present like myself as male. And I just, being pre-T, it was really hard to do that because I wasn't, you know, my complete self.
As most of you know, I said in one of my previous videos, if you haven't watched it, I haven't picked a name yet. I don't mind being called an abbreviation of my birth name, which most people still call me by, but it just doesn't feel like me anymore. I don't identify with it, and I need to pick one. But my trouble is, I don't identify with any name, really. There's names that I like, but I haven't just like read one and been like, oh my god, that's me. I'm still kind of waiting for that moment, but I don't think it'll happen because I have read thousands and thousands of names. So just gonna have to work on that one. Hopefully soon.
Talking to Elliot got me thinking a lot about names. Unless you have to change your name like he did, for most of us, we probably don't even think about our names that much. They're kind of just there. They're almost like a coincidental combination of letters to produce a sound that we label ourselves with. And when you think about them like that, that they're just random letters put together to make a sound, they can seem arbitrary and accidental. And yet they can be so important in shaping our sense of identity and who we are.
Hi, it's the 10th of January 2015, so Happy New Year. This is my first video for 2015.
Elliot recorded this video after attending a wedding. For many people in his family, this was the first time that they'd met him as Elliot.
I had a range of experiences from total acceptance to partial acceptance to people still getting used to it to a couple of family members who
still don't and probably won't ever accept my gender identity. Which is fine. Well, it's not, you know, what are you supposed to say? I guess I've just come to terms with it. I need to be me, and I need to be happy, and transitioning is part of that. So whoever chooses to support me, that's great. I really appreciate it. And to all of those who did call me Elliot and use male pronouns, it really means so much to me. It makes me feel amazing. Having that, having people call me the name that I've chosen for myself and male pronouns, it really helps you. Well, it helped me to feel so much more confident about what I'm doing and who I am.
How did that make you feel when people were either like accidentally calling you by the wrong name or like doing it intentionally?
I tried never to take it personally because it takes time for people to adjust. I mean, it sucks being misgendered and hearing your birth name. It's different if someone does it by accident rather than if they're doing it on purpose, like misgendering me and calling me my birth name. Because if they just slip up, like as long as people were trying, I didn't mind. Like I knew that it was going to happen because it's 20 years of habit that you have to retrain. But as long as they were trying to remember and trying to use the right name and pronouns, I was happy. Like it hurts when someone does it intentionally because they don't respect your gender identity.
What advice would you give to a person going through the same thing that you went through?
A lot of guys feel a lot of pressure to pick like a new name and make sure they've got a way to present themselves, but I always tell them, like, just take your time, you know, try out a few. If you don't like it, don't worry about changing it. A lot of guys think that once they pick one, they can't change it, like, because people just get sick of it or whatever, but, like, you can really change it as many times as you like until you find the one that feels right for you.
I like the name Elliot. I think it suits you.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. They all think it really suits me, and so I'm happy with that.
That story was by Lindsay Green, with assistance from supervising producer Beck Fari. This next story is from our archives. We first played it back in 2014, and I still think about it regularly. All the Best producer Tiger Webb is talking about his tie to a metaphorical twin.
So this is actually a pretty terrible story in narrative terms. There's no suspense. I obviously survived. I'm here. I'm telling it to you. But, you know, as I guess they say, it was such a formative experience. I was born 15 weeks early, and it was kind of a huge deal in Brisbane in the late 80s. I weighed 820 grams. I didn't even look human. There are photos of me taken from around about the time, and I look like one of H.R. Giger's aliens, you know, all teeth and stretched skin. The chances of babies born around that time surviving aren't great now. They definitely weren't great then. My parents reckoned I had to fight for my life like a tiger, and hence my name. And that's it. That's the happy ending. Only I had a twin. We didn't come from the same mother. He was someone else's kid, a friend of my dad's. I think they'd become like pregnancy friends, the kind of companions you only really get through surviving traumatic experiences. And despite being unborn and not actually possessing a personality, us twins, as our parents jokingly referred to us, had a lot in common. Our mothers even went into labor around about the same time as one another. But then we started picking up divergent interests. I was delivered by C-section. He wasn't. I lived, he died. My name's Tiger. His name was Leo. Leo's parents stayed in touch with ours over the years. they used to come round to Christmas parties at our place. And with Christmas parties, well, you've got to understand, I'm from a big family. You know, I'm the youngest, but there's always, you know, nieces and nephews, cousins around. So this couple who had lost a child would come to our Christmas parties. I mean, you can see where this is going, right? Christmas parties with homemade bonbons and children, happy, healthy, live children frolicking around them who'd survived when theirs hadn't. Of course it was too much for them. You know, I've got red hair. I was a loud kid. I loved singing and dancing. And you bet his parents would have looked at me and thought, how are you still alive when Leo isn't? You know, after a while, Leo's parents stopped coming around for Christmas. History gets easy when you start looking at it like it's a pair of branching binary decisions. Caesarean, vaginal birth. Child, no child. Events are hardly that neat when they're happening. But even then, the doctor that delivered me would later go on to write the textbook on handling premature births. How do you control for a variable like that? I was moved after a few days to a different hospital. And in what seems to me like a serious breach of procedural ethics, a nurse told my dad about another kid who had been born as early as me to different doctors and different parents. She died too. You know, I was even part of a pilot study growing up, examining the effects of oxygen on premature births. We had yearly checkups. After year 5, my parents were told to stop bringing me. I was too healthy, not showing the signs of physical or intellectual difficulties that premature kids often get. I was skewing up the study numbers. God, I hope that conversation was held in private. What a slap in the face for the other parents. And my folks told me all this once when I was very young. I think it's understandable. For them, this story is a celebration. I'm their miracle child, the one who tore through all these mathematical impossibilities to be here. They never had another kid, and I guess you wouldn't, would you? But they told me about Leo, and about my doctor, and how lucky I was to be alive. And I think their joke about Leo and I being twins really stuck with me then. You know, I didn't see the miracle of my circumstances. I just felt haunted. You know, I felt a slight and ghostly hand holding mine. Why am I here? I didn't earn this. That's another truth then. Nobody earns it. Maybe that's why we get so appalled at the death of children, in hospitals or in war. We look at that empty, scarred space where a child was and think, we never got a chance to see if they earned the right to be here. My birthday is coming up soon. I'll be 25. Quarter centuries are kind of like the new 21st, you know? I'll be expected to have a party. Friends, family, there'll be a cake, of course. My mum loves baking. Leo's parents won't be there. We stopped expecting them a long time ago.
That story was from Tiger Webb. Thanks to Tiger and all of the other contributors to this episode. All the Best is broadcast from FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and Triple R in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Selena Shannon, our community coordinator is Aidan Molines, my co-host is Pip Rasmussen, and I'm Miguel Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Listen to previous episodes at allthebestradio.com, and while you're there, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.